never true. Playing a fool's game and hoping to win. Fishing the wrong lake, losing again. I was looking for skis in all the wrong places. Looking for skis without making changes. Searching the lake, looking for traces of mud. I'm dreaming of hoping to find a ski.
All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 Podcast, a Jaybird.
Hey, Steve. What's happening?
Living the dream, they say. Every week here, living the dream. So, oh, yep. Man. Well, Jay, big news. Big.
Lay it on me.
As finally, I've teased forever. Believe it or not, if you can hear the sound of my voice right now, you can get hello. You can get on the Musky Shop and buy the new book, Musky IQ, Analyze and Execute, by yours truly, Jay.
Awesome.
It is here. It is freaking, guys. It's a big book vertically. It's tall. It's full size. Big old 12-inch, 200 pages of crazy is what it is, Jay. So going through this, just to lay it on you, what's in this book and what it is, because there's so many people, Jay, you've seen it, everybody, that got their hands on next level musky fishing. Believe it or not, it's been 3 years in between books. It seems like okay. Just yesterday, but
yeah,
3 years ago. But, you know, next level, we did that, worked that up, and taking the thought process thing where you look at other content. It's funny, I've been thinking about quote unquote musky content here as of late, because everybody's got an opinion on it. And there's, again, school of thought I will adhere to. There's a bunch of garbage out there, and there's very few good usable sources. You know, you pick and choose and all this stuff. But nonetheless, next level was just kind of like, whoa, right? Whole different animal here. This is not throwing it at the weeds, right? That's the punchline of that book. You know, just go huck a black book tail at the weeds. But anyway, Musky IQ is a different take on this animal, right? So you get your hands on this, you're going to realize a lot of it reads different, it runs different. This is to help you fix problems and identify patterns and things of that nature. This is not what bait to hold on. When should I use a bucktail? Not in there, Jay. Believe it or not. Are you shocked?
Okay.
Not in
okay.
there.
Okay.
Right. What color bulldog do you use? Guess what, Jay? Not in there. Right? None of that. What? But really breaking down, which is thought process. Right? So hope you enjoy it. It starts with thinking like a musky guide. Right? What's the thought process? We talk about it on the podcast. If you love the podcast, this is just, it's a different take. So I'm warning you, right? But the first is thinking like a musky guide of how to plan just your thought process. Probably just about to just going to hurt their heads, Jay. Are you ready for this? Are you ready? Are you sitting down?
Yeah, I need to
stand up and then sit down again. That's how it's going to hit you, right? One of those.
It's going to hit hard. That's what you're saying. Okay.
Chapter 2, failure analysis, diagnosing the musky mind. I've never seen it done before. Maybe it didn't need to be done, Jay. Some might say that didn't need to be done, right? But it is mainly a lot of the beginning of the book is about the mental game, right? Anybody can go buy a bulldog and a rod and huck and chuck. And actually, it's something I point out, I mentioned it here before, that the physical aspects of musky fishing, right? Physical aspects of musky fishing are not, they don't set you apart. There's hook sets, there's stamina, right? There's twitch muscles, there's stamina, there's this. But it's in your mind, Jay. Open your mind. No. That a lot of things that guys run into are simply thought process things, right? And so we'll see. Maybe they didn't ask for it. Maybe they don't want it. But nonetheless, there's Diagnosing the Musky Mind, where to be honest with you, you're going to, some of you are going to read it and go, what? And then read it again, right? And like I get into this where it's just generally a system, you know, and it, a system of how I think on the water, how I put information together, because I believe that's far more important than going, hey, this is the hot bait, right? How you figure out the problem, because it's one of those things, Jay, it's that old thing of teach a man to fish or whatever, but realistically, information in our world stops at this is what to do when, you know, this is what to do on so-and-so lake, or this is what you do on this. It's very finite. It's very definitive.
Where, basically, this has worked in the past kind right, of routine.
Mm-hmm. Opposed to how do we get there?
Right, right.
And having, knowing why the equation works is often far more important than knowing the answer, right? Which is understanding deeper, understanding what is taking place, and a lot of how we're getting, how you get in your own way at times, which is a different take, which is, you know, cognitive biases and all kinds of different mental traps that we do to ourselves. But you go from that, it's crazy, right? But it bounces around. You got everything you want in here, where I'm prefacing, because there are what I call field guides. So you have core chapters and you have field guides. So the field guides are, I would call this book a reference more so than a front to back read, Jay. You're not going to, I mean, I even said in the beginning, this is not meant to be read front to back. You can, and you know, maybe the first go around, that's what you do. So you get your fingers on every page here. But it goes through and really outlines and just takes it down to the brass tacks on a lot of different things, right? So fishing turnover, right? Like, let's just cut the crap and get to the stuff. Even breakdowns of the different vegetation types, how that interplays, different lake types. So you can take, okay, you're going, I'm going to this kind of lake. It has this. I need to reference those. And then you're putting your game plans together, right? Also, too, boat control, finally there. And one of my favorite things, Jay, the Musky Lures Owner Manual's in there, right?
The owner's manual for lures, okay.
There you go. You'll figure it out when you see it. But just really breaking it down to, like I said, that it's non-linear, but it's linear in formulating a plan, where dependent on what you're doing and what time of year it is, there's something there to kind of get you squared away, or different scenarios, right? I recommend 17 copies per boat. No, but like I said, I hope you guys find it of value. If you like the podcast, it's just thoughts organized on the page, which I like writing. If you haven't noticed, that's kind of my go-to cathartic activity. But there's a lot of stuff in there. Musky Myths, Jay. Chapter 12, Musky Myths, separating myths, assumption from reality. What? And then you flip around. Big musky rubber lures is in there.
Okay.
Right? It's in. What else? Everything. Live bait. Musky pressure conditioning and educated fish. It's all in here. Muskies on the fly. Ooh. Right? You got that. You got field notes. Whole chapter, live bait tactics for muskies. Muskies after dark. And then even a decision tree on handling fish, Jay. When it's just time to whack them. When do you just whack one? Whack them. Not really, but it's there. There's a lot. It is concise. It's like a textbook of musky fishing. Hopefully, you guys dig it. If you heard my voice, it's on the shop website now as of Sunday, the 26th. Get your hands
going up
on
right
it.
Now. Okay.
It's
okay.
Going up. You heard it here first. Musky IQ, Jay. Other than that,
excellent.
I hope so. We'll see. More on that later. I dig it. Anyway, moving on from my stuff. Jay, it has been a week. It's been a week and a half here. Not really a week and a half, but a figurative week. I'll tell you something I want to lay on you, right? And this plays everywhere you go, but you know, when you think of southern muskie fishing, Jay, people all the time think, what, timber, right? That's a perennial concept that people associate with the South. They go, oh, you know, from the standing timber of Cave Run through the laydowns of West Virginia. But I'll tell you, boy, has it been timberish. And something to throw out there, because it's funny, we've got the Northwoods opener here very shortly, or the Northwoods if you dare opener, some are calling it, right? But nonetheless, people are going to be hitting the water in days. We're down to days, Jay. We're counting days, literal days.
That's right.
Early season, once we get past the spawn, right, there is a bandwidth, a time frame, a window where these fish depend on different bodies of water that they'll be in, but are looking to associate with cover at varying depths. This week for me has been crazy. Got a 50 in the boat, got a 49 in the net too, and that circled around with a couple hard days in there on top of it, right? Of seeing the disparagement that you have post-spawn, where we always hyper-fixate. We always fixate so much on that shallow bite, right?
Right.
Where it's like, okay, post-spawn, get up on the flats, get up really shallow, blah, 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 blah. You and I have hit it and just tried to browbeat people that there's suspended fish out there. I think we covered that a couple weeks ago, talking about, okay, there's some opportunities there with suspended fish. But there are still deep cover fish, always related to structure, to get on big fish. Right, guy I had this week, dear friend at this point, practically family, client I've had for eons, right, Jay? It's we both watched each other grow old, if you will. But client, he doesn't want, Jay, he's not sanctimonious, but do you want to go out and catch a 25? You want to catch a 33? No.
Right? He's not interested in it, right? I 30, get it, sure.
35, no thanks. Right. I mean, he
not worthy of the iron,
not worthy of the iron, which is print the t-shirts now. but, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. There's, you know, to each their own. But dude is up there. He's a septuagenarian, Jay. He's in his 70s, somehow still swinging. I don't mean like old guy comes out on the boat and sits there. I mean, all day long swinging the bat. Right. Serious yeah, cool. Muskinger. So I get it. And it's like, all right, for me, from a guide standpoint, it's like I've been dialed. Things are cracking. It's like, okay, here's 36, 38, 39, 42, 30. You know, that pavlum, that mid bandwidth that a lot of lakes have a ton of fish or rivers or whatever. But it was like, okay, I knew going into this, it is time to lock in, boys. There's nothing around it. Now, you can't always do that, but conditions kind of align for that. And what I'm getting at is looking that first glimpse post-spawn, those weeks post-spawn, that those bigger fish, if there is deep cover and deep structure relative to these spawning areas, here it goes, you know, here whackety schmackety biggies in the net, Jay, right? Mm-hmm. Where honing in on that, that's what I was able to do this week. Now, for my pattern, it was deep timber and stuff that is like far removed, but we're always thinking shallow, 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 shallow. But, you know, that high teens mark, you know, pushing down to that almost that 20-foot mark, there are some serious bites to be had there post-spawn, depending on conditions, you know, and it was just a nice week of reiterating, okay, there's always multiple bites. There's always two to three patterns going at one time. And it was, you know, again, a scenario where you go adjacent deep water, adjacent, you know what I'm saying, to shallow areas. You add in the structure, cover's a bonus. Now cover was, I believe, paramount this week because I was looking for certain scenarios where there were structural elements, you know, that tied, because I mean, as heck, we've been in just such a, there hasn't rained here in eons. And just another one of those things where you look at it and you go, there's always multiple patterns. And the final cherry on the top is just that size class and the depth. That corollary between size class and availability to deep water just is the gift that won't stop giving. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, cool. Okay.
Anyway.
Ooh, getting locked in anyway. Locked That's in. Good.
Well, let me chew ice. My bad. Sorry. Things you should not do on a podcast, Jack. Mm-hmm. Go in there and just start hucking on ice. Nobody wants to listen to that on their morning drive time or whatever, whatever we're doing, whatever it might be. But no, it's just, like I said, just a thought to keep in mind and definitively, like, I can't always go, I'm going to dial it on the big ones. Horseshit. Right. But there are opportunities and sometimes one needs to go, what's the goal and what am I going to do? And if it becomes a size class thing or how am I differentiating my target size class, it's always depth. You know, just a big fish, big house. You want to keep it simple. They need a big, deep house. Anyway, Jaybird, the comings and the goings of the Musky Shop, it is unreal how much new stuff keeps coming in. Obviously, here at the top, you got Musky IQ. We still got the Critter, Menace, Banshee. Jay, you said, was it last week or are those in route? You said there's some follow-up Banshee stuff coming still, or has that already arrived?
It's arrived.
Good.
Yeah. There might be some more coming on top of that, but yeah.
Jeez.
Well, I'm not sure yet.
Rockin' and Roll Rodeo. So, got that. Okay, I just looked at it. Looks like there's a couple there. Jake Smith. Smitty Bates getting out in the garage, slinging the paint. Looks like it here. What we got? Smitty Bass Pike Crank 4-inch. Missed an opportunity. Caught the Smitty Busky, my friend. Could have been.
I asked him when he dropped him off. And he started laughing. I said, okay, what do you call him? And he's like, oh, I call him the Bass Pike Crank. And then he started laughing at himself.
Call it.
Like, that's okay. It's okay.
Smitty Bike. Smitty Bike.
Call it Basky. Basky. Basky.
Basky.
Yeah.
Or the Smitty Bike.
B-pike. He's in line with that. He just didn't officially call him that. Oh, so no, he didn't want to take your line.
Never. Yeah. What we got? We got 4 inches. What is that, tip to tail, Jay? A 4-incher there?
Yeah, right around there. It's like cool. A little over half ounce, a little something you can throw a bass tackle.
But built Musky Strong, built Smitty Tough, folks. If you want to get your hands tough on it, it's built Smitty Tough here in America, right there in Minocqua, near the crazy person with the bar. right down there from that tumor that sits in the middle of Minocqua.
So, wow.
Wow. More than that. We're not even, no, we're not going down that rabbit hole. Nonetheless, these look cool, man. That would be a really fun, you know what I'm saying? You've got that pikey, minnow, cranky, old school bait.
Real
that,
shallow diving, yeah. Snappy little wiggling thing.
Yeah, very you cool. Snap, you put that on for you got the kids, you got your wife's boyfriend who doesn't fish that much. You get them all in the boat, right? Put that on for them.
Yeah.
You know, see if they don't get one. Okay, and there's a 6-inch or two. Looks good. Good paint jobs. A+, Jake.
A+. Very nice.
You passed the muster, sir. It's the Busky. What else? Just in time, Jay. Everybody was just holding their breath. Bill Lewis MagForce back in stock. Looks. Are these custom colors?
Yeah, got a bunch of custom colors. Ooh, there.
I will say this. I know my Bill Lewis cars. So
and you saw that and you went, yeah, that is not a Bill Lewis paint job.
That's not
very
stock.
Very good, Steve. Very good.
See, I know a few. I know we got
a bunch of them.
I know.
They are selling like crazy. $10.99.
They're selling like mud cakes, Jay says.
Yeah, for a 1-ounce rattle trap. I mean, well, we all know how effective those are in parts of the country.
That's the thing, in quote unquote. You just said the operative thing. Let's go down that rabbit hole for a minute.
Let's do that rabbit hole.
In parts of the country. By parts of the country, I mean the U.S. and Canada is what I think. And for some
Honduras
reason.
Honduras exempt. Yeah, right. Exactly.
No,
right.
It's the Musky mind, right? The Musky collective has deemed that a completely Southern thing. And I'll tell you, you know, I'll give credit where credit's due. Booker had some shoulder problems, and he started downsizing real far, did pretty good on that J.B. Rattler. There's a time and a place for these things, and it is like I always have one or two in the boat. Actually, this is the one I run, which is the Mag, right? Can't go wrong with it. I think my, what is it, chrome black back, that's pretty shabby. I run that, and I actually have got a ton of Muskies on that Red Crawl, Jay. Why? I don't know. I think
those are damn south. Crayfish running.
I've caught Muskies eating crayfish. We've been down
matching
that rabbit
hole. The hatch.
Matching the hatch. But, you know, that's it. Color doesn't matter, but there's kind of the ones I got hanging out there. But something, I mean, if you're not throwing those, if you transport me magically to the North Woods on the opener, not the crazy opener, not the one we're dealing with this year, but general, I'm not saying transport me to the Minnesota opener, Jay. Let's do that one instead, right?
Okay, early June.
I wake up. Well, I'm just saying first out of the gate is what I'm getting at. The premises, first days on the water. You know, if we're establishing that post-spawn thing, that's going to be part of my plan even there. Done well in Canada, but it irks me that they get lumped in so much on that end of things. So, you know, you can't get an easier presentation at all. These are, do they still make the freaking floating version of this, by the way?
That's a good question. You know, I don't think they do. But if you ever, Bill Lewis has a gigantic catalog. It's very, very widespread.
I don't think they
redundant type baits, yeah. But I thought they stopped making that years ago. I could be wrong. Yeah.
I have done wonders with that. Now,
really? I remember buying one years ago, decades ago, and I'm like, oh, I hated it.
I'll give you a tip.
I'm sure I was running it wrong.
No, here's the trick on that. That freaking thing with a rubber core in front of it. And you pause it and stop it, and it would float up.
Okay.
You get
makes
it
sense.
Running over there, shout like you're in that 2 to 3 foot zone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just burn it, have enough to sink it, and it'll like, boom, that way it hit the bottom, that thing hit dead stop. Which is the adverse, but reason being, because I reposted an article. It was kind of like this thing about rattle traps on the app where it was just a repost that had been on the app a few years ago. Probably, you know, if you're new to the app, you probably haven't read it. And we'll recycle some of those articles so they're getting light of day again. And Booker texts me, I know where he's like, oh, I love your bobber trick, which is taking a bobber under a musky rattle trap and getting it to suspend, right? So throw it out, burn it, and then you would stop it and suspend that bait if you're getting like late fall, like if follows are late, or if fish are coming in and you can't get them boat side, is just that allows you to dead stop pause that bait. So either a floating one with a sinker or one under a bobber. It's not something I'm running all the time, but just something to put in your crawl, Jay. See? Mm-hmm. See, it came back. You said crawl. You see where I'm going with this? Okay, anyway. So, got it. Comes full circle. What else is going on? We got hats.
Yeah, two more styles came in this week. They keep coming. Keep rocking them.
I like them. Got lots of hats.
I like them a lot.
I like it a lot. Anyway, What else? What are you seeing up there, Jay? What are you seeing at this time?
Yeah, well, today's Sunday, the 26th of April. We had ice-free lakes starting about 5 days ago. Right. So they've had a little chance to warm up a little bit. Beautiful day today, but the forecast for this week is a lot of low to mid 50s for highs, which is slightly below normal, but it's not bad. Looking like 60s probably for the weekend, which is opening weekend statewide for Wisconsin.
Right.
So looking real good. You know, some people, you know, are just getting their boats out. Like I said, I mean, it's only been about 5 days since the ice is off.
Yeah, yeah.
the mid-sized lakes around here. So, you know, hearing some reports of people going out and catching some bass and stuff like that, which is legal if you release them. And pan fishermen are going to start, no doubt. And walleye fishermen are going to start, no doubt, in droves coming up this Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
it's looking good, you know, for some early season action. I think walleye fishing will be real good this weekend. Muskie, you know, a lot of people aren't fishing for them yet. So depends on the person you talk to. You know, a lot of the guides are, they start out with walleye trips and they're not going to fish for muskies anyway. So
that's one thing. Yeah. A lot of the guy, I mean, before everybody kind of knew this was coming down the pike, a lot of guys are like loaded up on walleye nonetheless.
Oh yeah.
Know, which is cool. The walleye bite, why do you think it'll be good? Just water temperatures being cold, or just such recent ice, or just conditions?
A lot of people hit river systems, opening weekend. With get on normal ice out, you can get anywhere and probably do pretty well on pre-spawn and walleyes on the bigger lakes. So, you know, even Trout Lake, stuff like that. A lot of people target that the first two weekends and do really well. You know, like 18, 20 foot using live bait and into some good fish.
Talked to a friend. I was leaving the immortal hellhole Home Depot, Jay.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, you know,
had to
go to the, of all things, you get off the boat, got to go to the depot, right?
What do they call it down there by you? Just they call it the depot?
Depot.
Home Depot.
Home Depot.
I get it. All right.
Anyway, but as I said, we're sidetracked there. Just one of my buddies is up north already, scored some sweet bass, you know, just out kicking around. And you know, just suspended jerks, all that stuff already, which, you know, you're already open into bass is legal already, right? I didn't just like sell him down the river or anything, did I?
Catch and release. Yeah, it's legal.
But what are people, someone keeping a bass? I mean, what are you going to do with that? Make like largemouth fritters or something?
They get kept. I was talking with a buddy of mine the other day, and you know, he lives in the southern half of the state, and there's a lot of issues with some lakes that I shouldn't go there. Just some lakes that dropped 18-inch minimums and went back to the statewide 14, and it's just like the last couple of years since they did that. You know, it's like you can't catch a 15-inch bass, they're all 14. It's just evident that, you know, people whack bass. It's just what they do.
Is anything okay up there?
Wisconsin?
No, there's a lot of things. I don't want to go down the list, but are you guys okay? Is everything okay? You can talk
with all the bass whacking.
You can talk. No. And we got bass whackers. We got we got native uprisings. We got musky openers. We got people, man. Try to be happy.
We try to keep things lively around here, Steve. You know that. Come on.
Yes. That is. Oh, yeah. You guys keep it lively, let me tell you.
You got to have something to talk about,
right?
Got
them whacking bass. If the Packers ain't playing, we're going to bitch about fishing.
They seem to not really enjoy
anything.
Bass populations anywhere like, around here. There's too many bass.
Too many bass.
We need more harvested. They're ruining the ecosystem. You know, you hear that a lot. It's like, okay.
A lot of opinions. A lot of opinions.
Strong opinions.
Strong, uninformed opinions. that's not a dangerous scenario at all. No.
Well, if you want some real excitement, go to the DNR.
No.
They have meetings in the first Monday of every April.
Come on now. Yeah.
And it's just like you want to hear people basically trying to fight each other, over their opinions on fishing and hunting regulations.
I don't have a degree in fisheries. Right. I don't have a degree in fisheries biology. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't name four elements on the periodic table of elements, but I know what to do. That would be fun. You ever watch Parks and Rec, Jay? The show Parks and Rec?
You told me about it. I never really have. I know you're a big fan.
I hilarious back in the day. But they would have town hall meetings on there. And that's about that's like, if you ever watch, one of my favorite things, I don't do, you know, I'll sneak onto the Twitters on occasion. If I see a clip of somebody talking at a town hall meeting, it's my favorite thing on earth.
Mm.
You know, it'll be like a zoning meeting, and somebody will come and be like, there's pigeons in my yard, sir. This is about business zoning, but the pigeons keep showing up and eating the corn. You know, just completely. The citizenry, Jay, the citizenry.
We need to get a scare clown on that damn tower. That'll fix the problem.
First up is TAC. I don't know if that's just a acronym or if his name's TAC. I hope he's got a brother named Tick. His parents had a sense of humor. Tick, anyway. That's a Tic Tac joke, Jay. You don't hear those very often. Tick, remember the candy?
Yes, Steve.
Hello, Steve and Jay. Do you have details on barometric pressure? At which pressure is it best to fish? How do you physically read a barometer? So I typically read a barometer with my eyes physically. No, I'm teasing.
Ouch.
Ouch. What we got here? So barometric pressure. It's one of those deals. Speaking of books, when I did Next Level, kind of crawled into this, right? The things about barometric pressure, the facts and statements made about barometric pressure started somewhere in the 70s, Jay, right? And that was coming from a couple different magazines, primarily like Fishing Facts magazine and all this stuff. Mm. It was someone had noticed the corollary between barometric pressure and fish catches, but there's not like, boom, this is the thing. Right? Let me pull this up.
Right, right. There's no hard data like at this exact degree.
Great, great thing. I'm just going to... Here's a... I'm quoting because I'm reading off a website here on my Giganto TV monitor. This is quote-unquote kind of where they leave it. You know, how does barometric pressure affect fishing? While humans are more or less accustomed to changes in air pressure, experts believe a fish's unique anatomy explains why their behaviors are strongly influenced by such changes. Specifically, fish have a swim bladder that is filled with air and helps them maintain buoyancy. By nature, this bladder is sensitive to even slight changes in pressure, which can cause discomfort for fish and affect their behavioral patterns. How do we know the fish are not comfortable? Let's throw that out there first and foremost.
Just thinking when you
causes
said comfort.
Discomfort. Yeah, in other words, when there's low barometric pressure and less pressure on a fish's body, the bladder expands. Fish may swim deeper. Okay, so they go on to say fish may swim deeper where the water pressure is higher as a way to adjust, becoming less interested in feeding until conditions normalize. Right. Well, let's unpack this. We've established that the fish have gone deeper. Now, the thought process that everyone has is that fish go deeper. This gentleman in this article that is one of the, if I look up fishing and barometric pressure, that's one of the first things I see, right? I didn't have to look far. His claim is, Jay, discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know. You know. Okay. Did you ask him? How did he get to that discomfort? Here's my thing. A fish has a swim bladder. We can all agree to that. They can also change their depth throughout the course of the day. And I don't believe that discomfort is the main driver, right? You can pop your ears. How much pressure change? When we look at like the millibars of pressure, Jay, right? The actual calculable numerical reading that we get in pressure changes. High pressure, low pressure. The high pressure at the surface of the water is negligible. It's not this massive shift, right? I, for one, believe that lighting conditions play far more highly than the pressure change, right? We've talked about this, but let's go over it. We have a high bright sun. All the fish got white bellies. Now, predators can contrast the sky, right? Their eyes, you look at a muskie's eyes, I've said it before, they don't have eyelids. They have a fixed pupil.
Yeah, good point. Right.
Right.
And high bright sun is indicative of high pressure.
All right. Now, they can see, but they can't see as well as they can in low light. Therefore, they're going to go deeper to the level of light penetration. High pressure, in my mind, is indicative of light pressure. My thoughts is it's not discomfort. It is a matter of efficiency. They're more efficient, deeper. Why do people struggle in cold fronts or high pressure systems? Because they don't slow down and they don't get near the fish. That's it. Now, the ocean, I don't know, right? There are actually, you look at it, and we got to make a separation here. I don't know crap about open water. I don't know crap about saltwater fishing. Guys will swear by it there. Also, too, the moon phase, we don't really have a great reason, right? There's no empirical data that says this is how the moon affects muskies, right? Doesn't exist. So, hearkening back to the next level, the book again, that chapter on the moon, I'm kind of agnostic and some, not agnostic, but I go both ways on that thing, right? Trying to play both sides because I'll see corollaries or I'll see bite windows. However, there's no hard data that says the moon does anything. Dr. Bob, right? We'll have him on next week. Dr. Bob doesn't believe any of it, Jay. He thinks the moon is phooey, right? I go, well, gives me something to plan the day by, right? At a minimum. And you'll see corollaries and whatnot. When it comes to barometric pressure, the pressure changes. It's the chicken or the egg. Which came first, right? You don't have one without another. You have dramatic shifts. So if we have a big pressure change, Jay, guess what we have? A dramatic weather change. We generally have a change in lighting as well, right? So it's hard to separate for me. One, it's not the causation and the breakdown in between those different elements. You have too many things changing to really pinpoint it and go, boom, this is it, right? So it's kind of you can chase your own tail on it. But like I said, for me, level of light penetration. Where are they most effective at predating? Right? The other flip side, we know because of I'll take the we out. I believe because of the effects of a front, which is lighting and more movement in the water column, food chain kickoff, blah, 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 muskies are more active, right? When we have the downside of the backside of that, most predators, most fish have fed as well. So you have feed ups and then slowdowns, right? So you have the duality of that. So if you're on the backside of a front, there's a lot of factors at play. So I don't believe that the barometric pressure is the causation solely. You see what I'm saying? There's a lot of contributing factors around that. So you can't say, you know, maybe if we could get a muskie in a tank in a dark room and we, you know, it's very hard to get a fixed point on that, right? You don't have a control. We got this guy saying, well, the fish feel discomfort. Cool. What about that? And I'm not even cherry picking here. I'm just reading. So for me, I'm looking at it as a barometric pressure. For me, is not something I track. I look at humidity, primarily dew point, things of that nature. That's kind of a work in progress, so I won't go too crazy on that one. But as far as the exact barometric pressure, but you'll find that, like I said, you'll find that corollary between barometric pressure and the weather primarily, right? So that's there. Jay, anything from your days as a meteorologist you'd like to share on barometric pressure?
No, I agree with the humidity thing too. I mean, really extreme dry days, you know, even if there's some cloud cover, just never tend to be as good as building humidity, which is indicative of, you know, probably falling pressure, you mm-hmm. know, and building clouds and all that. And again, that's all, it's all attached, you know.
Yeah, you can't separate a factor. Yeah.
Right, because that's creating less light penetration and, you know, better. Little light. Oop, got deer in the background. Oh, hey, get out of there. Deer all over the place.
Deer in the living room, he says.
Pressure's going down.
There it is. But
deer moving. Hey, I'm telling you.
You know, what do you know? I mean, there's definitely a cause and effect, right? Now, you say that, but this week before we got that the elusive 49. Hardest fish to catch in muskie fishing, by the way, Jay. It's 49. Not many of them.
Okay. It is. Okay.
Well,
okay.
They either end up being, you know, 49s don't happen that often because they end up just getting called 50s. But, you know, nonetheless, that fish in that bite, it was funny because you say that, and it was literally in the boat. You just feel it. You go, huh. Feels different. Doesn't look different, right? But it felt different. You actually got humidity back in the air. And I remember that where you're like, whoo, you know, where things change. But, you know, I like I said, barometric pressure and tracking and trying to really dial that in as the sole contributing factors, not a rabbit hole. I've really dug down and probably will not. Hunter says he's got $1 million idea. Let me read this first before I don't want to tell everybody. If it's $1 million deal, Jay.
Probably don't want to share it.
Right. Let me hold on.
Put it in your pocket. Don't let nobody hawk it.
Actually, dude, that's not a bad idea. Email me separately or I'll email you. I read it. It's actually a really good idea. So, Hunter, email me on that. That's actually, do not start emailing me your ideas, please. But that one's pretty interesting. That was actually, sorry, teasing. Moving on, John. Does anybody know a good outfitter or guide service for Georgian Bay? I'm having trouble finding an outfitter that isn't booked solid up for their season. Okay, not something we do often here, but if you guys know anybody, Georgian Bay, looking for a trip, email the app. Put you in contact with this guy. There you go. There, Jay, remember that? When you were like growing up or back in the day, did they have the Trading Post shows in Wisconsin?
Trading Post shows? No.
So in West Virginia, you could tune in on your AM radio station any given Saturday or Sunday morning. Like, this is the Trading Post. And you would write in, right? I got a screen door. And I got two wheels off of 85 Camaro for sale. Give me a call, Roger. Right?
Yeah, okay.
So that's what I felt like doing that. We're trying to hook up parties, right? You know, yeah, they used to have that. I remember, I think we brought this up previously where I was trying to sell a salamander in a pie tin. Got a salamander in a pie tin over here. Call me. My name's Jay. Give out your phone
number. That's old Stemke back in the day probably made his millions selling stolen wheelbarrows. Exactly.
That's how a man would sell a stolen wheelbarrow. Guaranteed.
Gotcha. Get away.
Hey,
with
there
it.
Is Dick Stemke. I got 17 wheelbarrows, varying condition. Call me it. Anyway, Scott, I bought a dial a musky rod, and I cannot stand the handle design of the foregrip, but I don't have the scratch in my pocket laying around to get another rod. Is there any way to change the foregrip? Let's look at this rod, Jay. That's the Daiwa.
Pro-Rex, maybe?
I'm betting. There's one of the Daiwa.
Okay.
Let me look here.
2, 4, 6, 8. Okay, here's a Pro-Rex XT.
I'm betting there's one of them that's got like a contoured handle, isn't there?
It's got a... Okay, the foregrip looks standard length, you know, like 5-6 inches, but it does look thin. Maybe that's what he's talking about.
No, it's just
diameter's too small, you know, and you want something beefier. Well, you could wrap that.
Here's the thing that I have done, or the thing I have done, the thing I've whatever. God, can't talk today. And that's a tough thing when you're doing a podcast, when you're fumbling and bumbling. I, for one, have hated foregrips as well before. So, options that you have. Jay said you could wrap it, which is, what is it, wind grip or something we have at the shop?
Oh, no, not anymore. I mean, okay.
Go to
golf tape, golf club tape, you know, something like that.
Go to the Walmart, buy you some golf tape or some tennis racket tape.
Tennis racket tape, yeah.
You can beef that up. I went to the extreme previously of working on just an entire rod. This is back in the day where you can get your hands on, I'm going to say it slow, Jay, cork rings, right? Cork rings. So you get your hands on this. Don't want to say it fast. You get your hands on some cork rings, and you're able to, then it's what they build and stack rod handles with, like high-end rod handles. You can get your hands on them from rod building supply places, right? Possibly even the Bay of E would have them. Somebody's going to be selling the cork rings. Watch your spelling. Cork rings. Now, with a rod with that already has eyelets on it, you're going to have to split them, right? So you can sand the inner diameter and build your own handle. That also works if you have damaged spots, you cut it out. Because imagine under your handle, if you remove the foregrip and the grip on a musky rod, it is just epoxy and the rod itself. There's nothing. You rip back the curtain, there is no Wizard of Oz. It is just epoxy and the rod blank. So you can take away any material you want and build it back up. Like I said, I use cork rings. And have them and built a new grip on a rod years back. Pain in the butt, going to be sanding a bit, but you know, you can glue them, super glue and epoxy, and you can make anything you want there if you truly want to mod it. If I was going to go that route right now, I would possibly look at an EVA option. I've seen on whether it be Amazon or just odd places, you know, parts and pieces kind of places, Jay. You can get EVA grips that you're meant to slide on a rod. You could do the same thing where you split that and put it on the rod, which EVA is sandable, right? So it's the foam grip you have on rods. That's a sandable material. So with an ultra fine sandpaper, you can contour that. And then, you know, if I was going to do that, I would probably put some of the rod wrap we have from the musky shop over it. Will give you a super clean look after the fact, right? So you could heat shrink that around whatever you built up if you really wanted to change a grip. But
yeah, I like that material. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so I wrap all my rods with it. I like the grip it gives me. But if I was going to do like a rod mod and breaking out the cork rings for my rod there, I would sand that down and kind of heat shrink over it with that rod wrap and kind of customize from there. But that would be an option. You know, if you truly, it's unfortunate you buy a rod and you don't like it. But that would be the trick there. Jay, any rod mods you got there? Any cork ring stories you want to share with the class?
Mm-mm. No, not at all.
Gonna stay away from that one, he says. Frank T.
Frankie.
Just absolutely crushed on the Menace this week. Took a short trip and had a great week fishing the Menace. I've noticed that the eats on this bait are happening equally when I'm pausing it, but also equally when I'm ripping it. I was unprepared to get strikes during a rip, as I've never had that happen on other rubber lures. Is it meant to do this, and what's going on? So, on that front, it's meant to trigger strikes. I have had a couple eats on that over the winter during the rip as well, right? One of those going right, you know, get last rip right where we're going into figure eight. Because what I do with the Menace is I'm going to treat it like a tube, Jay. Treat it like a tube, vertical.
Yeah, lots of popping. Yeah.
Yep, lots of popping, lots of falling. Get that last one-third of the cast coming in. I'm just going to pull it across, right? Not these giant bulldog rips, but, you know, move it. Instead
sweeps.
Of sweeps, right.
Sure.
Going into the sweep, picking up the slack. I've had a bunch of eats, you know, on that transition, but like I said, just in the straight sweep, and I've done well just sweeping the bait during the prototype as well. So with, let me try to think. Obviously, I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you the disbursement of during the sweep versus the pause, but like this guy's had, it's noticeable, which I think is interesting because you go they're committing. If they're eating on that, they're committed, and there's something about it that's getting going. So from the guy that made it, I can't tell you why, but I'm not mad that they do. Right? Multiple times you're just mid sweep and the sweep transfers into a hook set, Jay.
Cool.
And you just got to blast them, babe. It's, hey, you're not doing anything wrong. I ain't mad about it either, you know, but why they'll do that on that bait, I don't know. What I can tell you is when they've done it on the Menace and they've eaten it during the sweep, they devoured it. Just absolutely smoke it. And that was kind of part of the whole plan with that bait of a rubber bait that's getting where it needs to be, right? And getting
well, it's cool. Dirty. Yeah, I mean, it's all about the retrieve with that. The versatility of that bait designed to be popped like a tube. Pop, pop, it's up and down and doing that vertical thing and tantalizing them. It's getting attention at different depths, right? Because it's crossing different, depth lines. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, they seen this thing a little bit. They're interested. They're coming after it. And it accelerates and tries to escape. I'm going to see ya. I'm going to kill ya. And that's really cool.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting byproduct. Don't know how we did it, but we did. I ain't mad about it.
Yeah,
it's just different, though. I mean, you really look at your rubber eats. Vast majority, we always say, on the pulse, on the fall.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and with this thing, just a bunch. They think it's getting away, and they're just going to hammer that thing. Sam from VA. Steve, you and Jay talk about structure and mapping, but I never hear you talking about waypoints. Do you use waypoints? And if you do use waypoints, how do you use them when structure fishing or looking at your map? Wow. Okay. Waypoints. Jay, what is a waypoint? No, I'm teasing. So with your modern electronics here, everybody's got waypoints. Most everybody, I was about to say everybody should have. If you got the Muskie 360 app, you can drop it on the freaking waypoints thing that's in there. So you got spots and trails in there. You can waypoint from your phone, right? Unless you got a flip phone, you probably don't have a way to drop waypoints. Jay used to just carry small landscaping flags before the smartphone. Remember that, Jay?
Right. But the problem is they kept sinking on me, and I couldn't find them.
It's like dropping a waypoint.
I literally dropped it.
Anyway.
Darn it.
Darn it. Look bad how idea. Far we've come, baby.
Well, exactly.
Nonetheless.
Technology.
You have the availability to do this. Now, do I use them? Yes. I use them exceptionally sparingly. The reason being is, at times, you get too fixated on that, right? Now, my main driver for waypoints are things that I don't want to hit with my boat, right? Marking hazards. For a waypoint on an area, I hate the word spot, but because a waypoint is even more finite than a spot. Like that's it. That's where we need to be. What I like to use waypoints for is marking things that I don't want to hit with the boat, and marking really important edges more so than anything. So if I was going to tell you like what I implement waypoints for on my boat will be I'm thinking out loud, but I'm thinking of a couple different structural things where, okay, here's the definitive jump up in depth, right?
Right. There's complex structure. Complex, you're marking those edges. Yeah.
And a couple things in Canada where, you look at it's not community spot, but a lot of like Dead Indian and all these different places where these are complex structures, right? And having at least a rudimentary bearing of where I'm at, reefs, subsurface stuff. I definitely am marking humps and reefs, right? So I got something to drive to. I used to triangulate, old school, but okay, we've got that. But don't overuse waypoints. And that's what I try to avoid. I want to have like, okay, here's my area, because I think there's something about having everything marked out, like, oh, this is the thing. It's the same way I feel about trails, Jay. Well, this is my trail. You end up fishing things the same way every time, right? I'm keeping it on the trail, right? You're on the trolling motor now, and you're following your same trolling motor path you did before, right? You come up and you fish your waypoint, and you're out. I try to keep it non-linear when it comes to waypoints. Mark the important stuff and then come into an area you're about to fish. then heck, it's like with Muskie IQ with the new book, I talk about the decisions of like going into an area, right? From a boat control standpoint and all the other things. I don't like waypoints and trails because you crutch on them. So I recommend that you use it sparingly. You mark things that are not obvious, things that are hard to find, and mark things, you know, okay, here there's, let's say there's a weed bed across the lake, right, Jay? Just drop a waypoint on the freaking weeds. Okay, there's Lenny's weed bed. We got that, right? Check. You know, you got all your stuff. Have one major waypoint. Don't mark up every little inside turn. That needs to be organic. Yeah.
Like a highlight of a lake that you're not that familiar with. You might fish once every 2 years or something. It's like,
right,
here's that weed bed.
Mm-hmm. Or where it
just, as a directional thing, just as a highlight to get you there.
Right. You know.
Okay.
That's the way I think about it, because it, again, giving yourself, and I've reeled myself back from many, many years past where I was marking everything.
Right? Well, especially if you catch a hog, right?
Yeah.
Hog spotted, hog on, hog caught, whatever. It's just like
you're just doing too much. And mm-hmm. now you've got, it's distracting you from what matters. I mean, heck, I'm not trying to bring it back, but literally this, like the thought process, see what we're talking about? If you like that's the Muskie IQ, right? Which is, what do you do to yourself, right? Marking the whole damn map and saw a northern pike here. There's a 38. Here's a 37. Here's a this, right? You're leaving yourself breadcrumbs. Those breadcrumbs have nothing to do with what you're doing now. A waypoint is a memory, and that thing about don't fish memories is important, right? You got to be in the moment. And waypoints were yesterday. Waypoints were 5 minutes ago where, it, like I said, I don't want to set myself up for failure because of this regimented thing. Because, I'm admittedly so, my fish finder was way too many, a decade ago, it was way too much. Way too much, right? Marking every follow. What did it matter? He followed off that corner of the weeds today, that doesn't mean diddly. You see what I'm saying? That's misleading information. That's information that could lead you down the wrong pathway later, opposed to staying open and cognizant of what's going on. You know? Or do what Jay does. He just literally, Jay, you've got waypoint. You literally have a Garmin in your truck, right? You just run waypoints to and from the Muskie shop everywhere you go. There's a tree.
I'd get lost without it.
Literally, yeah. Home. Yes. Well, there's not a house.
Where's my home icon? I can't find it.
It's weeds.
GPS is down. There's just somebody help.
Fortress of weeds around his house. He's got a he's got an LVS 32 mounted to your bumper.
Okay, I don't know what that is.
A transducer. Jay ain't there. Jay ain't there scoping. Dan the Musky Man.
Ooh.
I'm in the market for a new reel before musky season starts here in Minnesota. What's your current, what's the current reels you guys like? I'm mainly fishing blades. Don't kill me or laugh at me. We won't. Mainly fishing blades, glides, and rubber. But also fish tubes. Okay. I think Jay and I, we touched on this the other day, bemoaning the status, the current world of musky reels a bit, Jay. Bemoaning. Yeah. What do we got here? You know what's in and out. Okay. What do we like? Yeah. What do we don't like?
Well, start with Shimano. You know, pretty much some of the best. Yep. You got a Tranx.
Yeah.
You got a Tranx 400. That'd be one to look at. That'd be one to consider.
Oh,
the question being, there's two, and Shimano, bless their hearts.
Bless them.
they only have two gear ratio options, you know?
Right.
Keep it simple. They have a high speed and a normal speed.
I actually got my hands got my hands on that new reel on the 400 there, Jay.
Oh, that I sent you?
Yeah. Interesting. lock thing on the side. If you pop one of those guys open, by the way.
Uh-uh.
Okay. Let's go a side street on the Tranks. So pop the side of the Tranks open, the new model. The anti-backlash. So if you open the late model, the Tranks everybody knows and loves before they've upgraded it, if you open the side plate of that reel up, you have the spool and you've got all these little plastic little things on the spool that allow you to adjust your spool speed and backlash protection, right? Me, I took them all and just popped them all off. Zero anti-backlash, right? On this new model, you can't remove them. They actually fold in and out, which is interesting. Pop one of them open. It's a different system. It seems pretty elevated, you know, because you see it even in their ad copy, you know, what you see them talk about. They're just talking about the anti-backlash control. They don't go into it, but they've redesigned the entire side plate of that reel. And the internals are different on the spool itself. So more on that later. I'll see casting distance and stuff, really give an assessment this week. But you can't remove those. You can't augment them. You can just fold them in and out. So if you look on the side of that spool, it's got these little locky arms. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays wear and tear wise. You know, you've got the adjustment, but nonetheless, I mean, what you're saying, Jay, that the Tranks 400 right now is industry standard, in my opinion, because the honest take is, where are the Abus? You know,
yeah.
Well, elaborate for that, because I mean, there's a lot of people, heck, you know, I got clients and friends that go, well, what happened to those? What's the skinny there?
Yeah, you said where are the Abus? You're referring to the Abu Garcia Beast, which came out last Labor Day and was quickly recalled because they weren't happy with the drag system. Wasn't up to snuff, so they were repairing them or redoing something on them, and they have not hit the market since. So we were promised we'd have them at the end of April. That was the latest. So there's only a few days of April left. We'll see if that happens. If we do get them in, we'll put them on the website because they seem solid reels. I mean, I've got one. I haven't used it yet, but it seems good.
Yeah, I mean, it's
that seems well made. And yeah, let's see. They're not on the website because we don't have any. I'm trying to think of what they're calling the darn things. They're not calling them Beast. What are they calling those things? What's the size they call them? It's the same size as a Daiwa 400 low profile, and it's the same size spool almost to the T as a Shimano 400.
Gotcha.
So just keep it at that. Whatever it's called, you know, we're going to handle the big ones that are that size.
Yeah,
so,
well, hopefully they get them in here. People, the pimp folks.
I think it's a B60 and a B61, which would be the left hand, I believe, is what they're called. So those will be good. Yep, they're in the same price range as the Tranks, so they're not an inexpensive reel. They're a high, you know, top shelf reel.
The thing is this, and it's worth doing, right? Because it's funny, Jane. We were literally on the phone a couple weeks ago talking about the reels, and you have. Shimano will have the singular offering, right? Or excuse me, two gear ratios, I believe, correct? They're going to have a 5-3-1 and like a 6-3-1 on that. Does that sound about right? Somewhere in that neighborhood?
On the newbie. 5-8.
5-8. Yeah. Okay, so the Tranks, you got a 5 and a 7. If you want variety, and it's you can't get it all under one roof right now when it comes to musky reels, right? Where you got a couple models. And now Daiwa is kind of everywhere. I mean, the honest take right now for me on reels, there's not a bad one. I've said it before. There's not a bad one of the main squirrels there. You know, if you want longevity, you want a reel that you got a warranty on it. It's not going to break. It's going to be quality. You can't go wrong. But I mean, I get it. It can be confusing too a little bit with the Daiwas, right? You got. Okay, we have the Lexa. You got 3-400 on LX, and then the HDs, and then the 500s, right? Obviously, gun in size. And you have TW, and you have the Lexa TW. So you've got a lot of options there. I would say the core, like if you're going for a one-for-one comparison to a Trinx, which one are you thinking, Jay? Because I'm thinking the TWS, right?
What, yeah, that's the dial. It's yeah, it's called the Lexa TW. It looks a lot like the Prorex TWS, mm-hmm. which is that one. That's a good reel. I've got one of those. Right. That's the one with the purple spool.
Yeah.
Black exterior,
right.
But the TW is the one you've used a lot. I don't mm-hmm. have one of those. That's a higher step yet. Mm-hmm. That's the all dark gray model. Very similar in weight, in size, and feel, and everything. Great drag system as the Shimano Trinx 400s.
Yeah, that's kind of like, that is the Cadillac of the mm-hmm. dial is the TW. The TWS, though, is like I said, would be, it's kind of like, I would say, the comparable dial to a Trinx, right? If you're going like the, like, I would say that I would say the TWS, the purple one, is like the core one. That TW is the is even a step up from Trinx, right? As far as feel, like, that thing launches baits, dude. It's silly, right? That, but what's the deal? Just so people, this dude can understand, and we're trying to fumble through this. Is there a definitive difference from a TWS, the purple one, for lack of this, to the Lexa? Or is it just the line gathering system that
they both have that T wing system?
The Lexa 400 HD. Hold on, I'm looking.
Oh, between
on
between the
now
okay,
what's
the Lexa.
What I was getting at, dude, is okay. Now I'm looking here. I'm answering my own question. Sorry. So you have the Lexa 400 HD, right? Which does mm-hmm. not have a T wing. So the Prorex and the TW. There's too many reels, but
you're right the okay. TWS and the Lexa TW, the high-end ones, they'll have that T-wing system, and that's right. Why you're getting such great distance on your reel.
Yeah,
that
right.
thing is pretty cool.
But okay, so the breakdown here, if you're looking, I mean, I don't, it doesn't matter that much. I mean, Lexa or Prorex, when it comes to those, the TW is great, but I mean, if you're just going for rock solid, Prorex, the TWS, the Lexa 400, or the Trinx, I mean, heck, we're going down a rabbit. Like I said, we've sidecarred here. What, you know, that's where I would be going at bare minimum if you're throwing that kind of water to that, or you could always go to the Komodo. Why not? Moving on, Jay. There's too many reels.
Yeah, and it's a whole other rabbit hole when you start, you know, he was talking about using a pretty wide variety
yeah.
of lure type. So, you know, from heavy to light to hard pulling to whatever. So, gear ratio, there is no one gear ratio you should be looking at. You know, I mean, Steve and I are both kind of under the
school of thought
that a little bit lower gear, not low gear ratio, but in that mid-range, you know. The super high gear ratio ones
are special.
Well, number one, probably aren't going to last as long.
No.
As, you know, there's less tension and stress on the parts. If you go with something that's pulling in about 30 inches of line per crank, and that'll get anything done. If you get a 31 inch with the Trinx, went up an inch, per turn of the handle, you bring in 30 inches of line. You start getting about 40 inches at super high speed, and it picks up slack line quick, but for certain lures, it's going to be too high gear ratio.
You get
too much.
Yeah, you get high, I mean, 7 and 8, that is one dimensional. It's just, you can.
Yeah,
again,
one dimensional.
I've said it till I'm blue in the face. It's real easy to turn the handle faster, right? It's not the most efficient. You can wear yourself out. I get it, but. You know, 6'3", 5'8". I'm a 5'8" guy most 99% of the time because you can always turn the handle faster. But I mean, when it comes to reels now, there's again tons of options. That's kind of the core where to go. I think it's like what's going to fit in your hand the best. I feel like that Trinx, and I got to spend time. Don't hold my feet to the fire. It feels just ever slightly different, smaller, even on that side plate, you know what I'm saying? A little bit more ergonomical. And I mean, I think that's the important thing is it going to fit your hand well? Because at the end of the day, if you get the right gear ratio, it becomes a matter of, is it well balanced on the reel? Is it not fatiguing? Right. That's why you're never going to see me throw a Tranq's 500. Right. I don't see a place for it. Right. Burning double tens. If that's all you do, good on you. But you know, that to me, that's a behemoth. I go, this is just silly. Right. I can get it done with other things. I mean, there's tiny applications, but you know, the Lexa 500. I mean, if I'm ripping pounders, those big toothy tufts. Yeah. Anyway, moving on from reels. James, I heard you guys. I've heard you guys talking about not upgrading your downscan fish finders. What do you mean by this? Why should somebody not upgrade them? Well, I'm referring to, I've mentioned that downscan. Like I'm not upgrading mine for a minute. I'll probably do some different units next year, but downscan's not changing enough that it matters to me. And mapping is not changing enough that it matters, right? If I've got really good maps, that's not going to change anytime soon. Downscan is downscan is downscan. You know, that's why it's like this revitalization, why all these fish finder companies, you know, you got Hummingbird and Garmin, you know, they were biting at the bit, Jay, you know, with LiveScope coming out and the different live imaging, because at a certain point, you can't keep saying, this is the best downscan, the best side scan you've ever seen. You know what I'm saying? That was the cycle for a lot of years. And at a certain point, you just go, what does it matter? My downscan is downscan. Your map's your map. So I never really focus on that. Jody, Michael, and I were actually looking at different Garmin things yesterday. Responded to an email from the fine folks over there. And I was looking at some of those screens going, are you kidding me? Right, you got $6,000 screens, Jay. $6,000.
Wow.
You don't got to have it. And that's the one thing, you know, I look at my rig or look at stuff on my boat sometimes and go, this is excessive, right? And I realize now, the longer I've done this at the level I'm doing it, you know, some of this is just goofy. You know, you got a billion baits and a billion rods and a billion this. But you don't need any of it. You know, grab it. This week, again, I went creaking, Jay. And some days it's just nice to get away from all that shit, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Went back out. Back to the basics. We went out freaking, you know, we'll roll some video on the musky shot before too long on it. Going out, cracked two out of the old palm prower. You know, doing a float. I have more fun doing that a lot of days than the screen world, you know. But, you know, in general, I mean, if your maps work and your downscan works and you got solid water temperature, you're pretty much made in the shade on your downscan center, your main units, right? It's not going to change enough because it is what it is. There's not enough change in the data it can gather. Maybe you got a nicer screen because if you look the last iteration, the last big change on core units, if you will, your standard fish finders, was touchscreen. You know, and I don't use touch versions of the Garmin because I don't want to get fingerprints all over it all day long, something you're staring at. But you know, my helm and my mapping up front are touch screens, and it's just like it doesn't matter. So I would just, if you got maps that work and you got a downscan that works, leave it be, you know. It's not going to make a hill of beans. You know, it is what it is. Sometimes too, get away from the stuff, Jay. Step away from the screens and crack open a book, Jay.
Improve your musky IQ.
Oh, now we're talking. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, I am the product of infomercials, folks.
But wait till you see the cover. It's striking. I mean, you texted me the cover, what, 30 seconds before we started? First I'd seen of it. You know, we got the books in, but nobody's even opened the boxes. It's just, they're just waiting. They're waiting.
Well,
for the right moment.
If you can hear my
right
voice
now,
they're on the site now, guys. Awesome. Enjoy the book. Thanks for listening, Jay Bird. Say good night.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Later.
Have a good one.
I'm on Titan. I'm a pretty good guy for nerd, but I I'm not mentally stable. Oh yeah, we'll catch muskies.